The podcast you're about to hear is a loaded podcast. We got to talk the NCAAs, we got to talk the New York Giants, and we got to talk Ohtani, and of course, the Yankees. Loaded pod, so sit back, relax, and enjoy this one. It's the Grind Hours Podcast, and it's coming in your ear. Telling you all of the news that you need to hear. Baseball talking, football talk, and NBA as well. Joe has got the highlights, and it's just like show and tell. Joe and all his radio friends, make sure the updates never end. Breaking news and analysis, tennis shoes and hockey sticks. Grind Hours Podcast, and it's streaming on your phone. Sports Talk's never been so good, so listen in your home. Hey. Hello and welcome to the Grind Hours Podcast for Monday, March 25th, 2024. Recording this at high noon Eastern time, and I got to start with the basketball, of course, the NCAA tournament, both of them, and I'll start with the women's first, because there wasn't as much excitement in the women's tournament as there was in the men's, but there are a couple of notes that I want to talk about with the women's March Madness tournament. Number one, I'm so happy Ohio State lost to Duke. It's the only time I probably will ever root for Duke, but if you missed it in the NCAA tournament on Friday, I believe that was day one of the women's tournament, I watched, while I was working Bart and Han, the Ohio State main game. Now, if you're unfamiliar with the women's tournament, and this might be your first women's tournament that you're watching, the first round is usually hosted by the highest seed of that region. Now, there are some that aren't, but it's usually, just based off of geography, the highest seed hosts, or, you know, one of the one or twos host the regional part of the, and regional in air quotes, the regional part of the first round. So, Ohio State pulverized Maine. Pulverized. They pressed basically the entire time. Basically the entire time. They didn't pull their starters out until 2 minutes to go. And they pressed up until that point. Full court pressed a 15-seeded Maine. So I'm glad Duke went into their building and gave them a can of their own medicine. They didn't press the entire time, but they beat them. So yet another reason to be happy for a Ohio State loss. It just happened that I was rooting for the Duke's women's team. Secondly, Caitlin Clark moving on, surviving and advancing, and she didn't play all that well in the last game that she played on Saturday, but it's important for the women's tournament to have her in it, obviously. It is important for her legacy as quote-unquote the greatest college player of all time, end quote, to go and win a national tournament. It is important for the continuation of the popularity of this tournament to have the draw that the men's tournament doesn't to have her in it. Because she is the story of this college season. So I'm happy that even though she didn't play all that well, her team's moving on. I don't know if I'm going to pick them against LSU, but I would like to, actually I did my women's bracket. I have UConn and Iowa facing off in the Final Four. Now we get to Kim Mulkey. What she did on Saturday, and if you didn't hear it, she's threatening to sue the Washington Post if a reporter that's doing a story on her publishes a false story about her, threatening legal action. Now, a couple of things on this. Number one, you're a celebrity, Kim.
trying to prove defamation is a very hard thing to do. You're not a private citizen. This isn't going to be an easy court battle if you go that way. Just know that. There have been very few public people that have won defamation lawsuits. Two, this was a story that I would say 98% of the country, myself included, didn't know was a story until you brought light to it. So you've put the spotlight on yourself. Three, you're going after a major publication that, when dealing with a situation and a story like the Kim Mulkey story, they don't usually get their facts wrong. You're talking about the paper that set the standard for investigative journalism in this country, taking down, Watergate and Ronald Reagan. A paper that published the Pentagon Papers before anybody else. A paper that holds the ethics of journalism to the highest standard. Now, there might be some writers at that paper that don't necessarily emulate Bernstein. And it's very hard to emulate that guy. But this is a story that, for me personally, is very hard to be objective on, because she's attacking me basically at my core. If you don't know, I have a journalism degree from Brooklyn College. Not multimedia journalism, regular journalism degree. Not journalism television, not journalism multimedia, not a multimedia degree, a journalism degree. Go out and get a story, journalism. Go get your sources, journalism. So when someone's attacking the free press, I have a problem with it. I have a very, very big problem with it. Because in Kim Mulkey's situation, people will look at her side of the story and back her. And go after the quote-unquote crooked media. Well, if the reporting that this reporter is doing is accurate, it's not a hatchet job. It's not a hit piece. It's not inaccurate. No matter how hard you try to defend yourself, if the actions in this story, the story as of recording this has not been published, so we have no idea what is even in this story. But whatever comes out, if it is factual, then Kim Mulkey looks like a fool. Not only for putting a unnecessary spotlight and bullseye on her team, which they played a very tough game against Middle Tennessee last night. And as I predicted on the Anita Marks show, the first question out of the first reporter's mouth was, did you think your team was distracted because of your comments the night before? However far LSU goes in this tournament, this will always be the first question. And it will piss Kim Mulkey off to high heaven. I have no doubt about it, but you put this on yourself. There's no one to blame but you for this. And part of what I have to say about her comments from last night, with her players not knowing that she said what she said, that's nonsense. Nonsense. It was all over Twitter two nights ago. All over Twitter. Your players have social media. Your players know what you said. I'm sure you went to your players and said, I said this to be open and honest with them, because you're not going to lie to your players. You're not going to hang them out to dry and have Angel Reese go into your office, wherever it is, or your hotel room, and say, well, I saw this. What's this all about? No, you're going to be up front with your players here. So she's lying to us there. Another reason is she's backing Brian Kelly. If you don't know Brian Kelly's exploits, have fun Googling Brian Kelly. So this reporter, wrote a unflattering story about Brian Kelly's move from Notre Dame to LSU. Kim Mulkey didn't find that story all too appealing and is backing Brian Kelly and is trashing this reporter because of a quote-unquote hit piece. Well, if you go back and look at that story from on Brian Kelly, which I did, everything's accurate. Because Brian Kelly, and he can paint himself in whatever light he wants to, hung Notre Dame out to dry. Didn't tell his players he was leaving. Went up in the middle of the night and took the LSU job. So, that's that. I 10 minutes on this. Let's switch to actual basketball. And switch to the men's tournament. Actually, one more note on the women's tournament. South Carolina and what they did last night to North Carolina. Oof. Yeesh. They're going to be tough to beat. They are going to be tough to beat. But switching to the men's tournament. First thing I have to say is, how's your bracket? Mine's a little busted. But in the one I did on this podcast, I have 12 out of the 16 left. I have 7 out of the 8 in the Elite 8. And I have 4 out of the final 4 still left. So I'm in pretty decent shape. Pretty decent shape. But the one thing that I think the overarching story from this past weekend was about the men's tournament is, don't touch it. No need to expand. It's perfect. It's as perfect as you can get. It never disappoints. It always has drama. It always has weird, wacky stories from places you've never heard before. Jack Golke was the king of the weekend. He is still the king of the weekend. Up until halftime, I would say majority of the country, if not all of the country, outside of Oakland, Michigan, thought Oakland was in California. And Jack Golke, who looks like a 35-year-old accountant, got a NIL deal from TurboTax. That story alone is tremendous. Tremendous. It's the story of the weekend. And I was actually rooting for Oakland after they busted one of my brackets, my second bracket, which I have in the great Dave Rothenberg's bracket challenge. Still doing pretty well in that. Still doing pretty well in that, Dave. A little bit behind you, but I'll catch up. I'll catch up. But I was rooting for Oakland after they beat Kentucky because we were going to have head coach Greg Campy back on Dan Gross's show. So I was rooting for me, essentially, because it was going to impact, you know, the people I work with. So I was rooting for Greg Campy and Jack Golke and Oakland, but I do want to touch on NC State and, you know, DJ Burns, the refrigerator with ballerina feet, and that team. Because watching the ACC tournament, I fell in love with NC State. I watched a ton of their games. I think I missed one of their games. It might have been the first round matchup. I didn't see them beat Duke. But I watched them because they beat Duke, and I watched them all the way through the rest of the tournament, and I fell in love with them. And I said this yesterday on Anita's show. I need to, when it comes time next year, to make a note of it when watching conference tournament play. And if I love a team, to not shortchange them when they're brought into the big dance and back them. I'm not saying all the way, but back them a considerable amount. And I discounted what NC State was doing. And I shouldn't have. And I'm kicking myself for it because I should have them right now in the bracket, and I don't. And that's on me. Sorry, that's on me. And I'm sure everybody in the state of North Carolina is going bonkers right now for NC State. So good on them. They are the Cinderella so far this year in the tournament. And hopefully they continue. It's going to bust a lot of brackets, mine included, because again, I didn't have them going this far. But it's good for the tournament and the growth of the game. Also, in terms of Clemson, who was bitching and moaning about a month ago about the net rating and how that's set up. Shut up. You're in the tournament and you're in the Sweet 16. Shut up. I don't want to hear anybody complaining about the net rating anymore. Or KenPom. Or whatever rating that you have a problem with. Especially if you're a coach and you got into the damn tournament after all that yelling and screaming. And you're this far away, or into the tournament, and you got a chance still at winning the title. Shut up. Shut up. All right. Couple more things. Number one, there's always a few teams that look phenomenal in the first weekend that get ousted on the first day in the second weekend. And I have three candidates for such case. Number one, and this pains me, because I love this team and this program so much, Marquette. Dodged a few bullets. They looked decently strong in the second half of their game yesterday, but they are on upset watch. They're the number one team for me that looked good at times, dominant at times, but they could be on upset alert. Number two, Purdue, obviously. Not because I have it in my bracket, but because, I mean, they scored 100 and they won by a million yesterday. It was, and Zach Edey was Drago from Rocky. He had the Terminator look on his face. All business yesterday. And they put up 100 in regulation. Not double OT, regulation. So they're number two. And number three is Arizona. And I like Arizona. They have a lot of depth. I made the case a couple of weeks ago for Arizona. But with the way that the bracket shakes out for them, I just talked about Clemson yelling and screaming that they can't get into the tournament. They upset Baylor in a rough and tough game. And they look pretty good. And they beat a New Mexico team that, if you listen to the bracket podcast that I did with my dad, I had New Mexico going a long way and actually upsetting Arizona to get to the Elite Eight. So Clemson's rolling right now. Rolling. So if you're Arizona, you definitely have to be clutching your pearls as you go on the flight to LA. And lastly, I got to touch on the nonsense that has been coming out this weekend about Coach Cal, John Calipari, the coach of Kentucky. There are a lot of people saying, well, what does this mean for Coach Cal? Could he get fired? Well, no, he's not going to get fired because of the lifetime contract and the buyout situation that they're going to have to pay him this year if they didn't so fire him. Number two, who are you hiring that's going to be better than Cal? Who? Name me the guy. Dusty May just went to Michigan after they fired Juwan Howard after a deplorable season. Horrible season for Michigan basketball. And rightfully so. They moved on from an alum after a season like that. So who are you hiring? Who are you wooing away to go to Kentucky after you fire Cal? Now, let me draw a comparison for Kentucky. Louisville moved on from Rick Pitino because of the scandal. Where has has Louisville been since then? They've been in the cellar. They've been one of the worst men's programs in the country since that. Now, I'm not saying the situations are apples to apples. They're not. Patino was doing some shady stuff. Cal, he's just losing in the NCAA tournament in the first round. That's all he's doing. He's getting there, but he can't get out of the first round past couple of years. He's lost to multiple, I think three straight years, he's lost to double-digit seeds. And you're Kentucky, a proud program, an elite blue blood of blue bloods. Who are you getting? And with Cal, you know who he is. He's a recruiter. He's a promoter. He is a talent evaluator. He's not a good coach. He hasn't really been a good coach for a long time since he shifted his focus to getting the most talented freshmen. He's got a lot of things over the years that have, from a coaching standpoint, been question marks. And even when he won with the Anthony Davis team, he had a couple of question marks that year with coaching. So it's not like he's the greatest X and O's tactician. He's a recruiter. And still, he is probably the biggest brand you could have in men's basketball now that Roy Williams and Mike Krzyzewski have moved on. And even Jim Boeheim at Syracuse. They've all moved on. Jay Wright, as successful as he was never the brand that Kentucky and Calipari have been. So, do you want to give that up just because you're in a phase of some down years? They're the Yankees of college basketball right now. They're the biggest brand going through a championship drought. And they've had a couple of lean years. And I get how frustrating that can be, Kentucky basketball fans. I'm living it right now with the Yankees. But do you really think if Calipari has to change his philosophy of recruiting freshmen to recruiting transfers and going all in on the transfer portal, and shifting focus and getting a quote-unquote veteran team as opposed to all freshmen. You think he couldn't win? He had to change his focus? I get it. That's where the game is. Game has kind of moved past that freshman talent and just get all the best talented one-and-done guys and then boom, rinse and repeat next year. It's all transfers now. Everybody has impactful transfers. Go up and down all the rosters that are still left in the tournament. They all got transfer guys. So, I'm not counting out Coach Cal. I'm not firing Coach Cal. Let's ease off that train. Just a little bit. Just a little bit. Let's go on the track record. Maybe a little bit longer. Just maybe. If he does the same thing next year, okay. Put him in the hottest boiling water possible. And it's 2026 or bust. But for now, really? We're firing Cal? Really? All right. Do it if you want. But again, Kentucky. You go ask your biggest rival how moving on from a legend has progressed that program's progress. That's all I got to say on that. After the break, we will switch to football because I got to talk about something that, speaking of boiling water, I'm boiling over with the New York Giants. We'll get on that next. SeatGeek is the number one ticket app for buying and selling tickets. Sports fans, music fans, comedy fans, theater fans, fans of tickets. Use my code GRINDHOUR to get into the building to get yourself a seat. Again, that's code GRINDHOUR at checkout for $20 off your first purchase at SeatGeek.com or the SeatGeek app. One more time,
code GRINDHOUR. That's GRINDHOUR at checkout.
All right, I have to switch gears completely and go to football and talk about the New York Giants, strictly because of a segment we did on Gordon Damer's show on Saturday. Gordon did a segment, and you can listen to it on the ESPN New York app on the podcast, about the Giants and how much money they're spending on offense. And that got me thinking about GM Joe Shane and the job he has done in 2 years with the Giants. And I know 2 years is not a long time to switch a football team around and get them trending in the right direction. And the situation that he took over with the Giants was as dire as it possibly could get from a cap situation and a talent perspective. But what Joe Shane has done essentially in his 2 years is not get out from under Dave Gettleman's cap hell and lack of talent drafts and mismanagement of the roster. He's compounded the mistakes. Completely compounded every single mistake. Let Saquon Barkley go. Gave Daniel Jones a massive contract. Now, I know, and I said this on Gordon's show, and I'll say it here, and I'll say it because this is a misnomer about the Daniel Jones contract. Everybody's saying, well, they should have just gave Daniel Jones the fifth-year option. No, that's revisionist history. Nobody in their right mind, based off of the first 3 years of Daniel Jones' career, would have given him the fifth-year option because he didn't prove himself. He was hurt all the time. So he was not getting the fifth-year option. Where they were wrong was not franchising Daniel Jones and giving Saquon Barkley the extension. That's where they were wrong. Because if it's reversed and they have Saquon Barkley long-term and they are now looking for a quarterback, you're in a better position. I get it. Your best player probably right now cannot be a running back. But in terms of talent, they would be better off. Because, look, I'm out on Daniel Jones. Even though what I'm about to say is the complete opposite. I'm out on Daniel Jones as terms of a franchise guy. And, quote unquote, the guy. But keep him around for another year. Reason why I say that goes back to Joe Shane. Look at Joe Shane's drafts past 2 years. Evan Neal, bust. Jalen Hyatt, jury's still out. Wandale Robinson, jury's still out, but it doesn't look good. That guy can't, he's not a talent evaluator. He's a cap guy. And I get it. DJ Burns, pass rusher, that's where you want to go. They gave Brian Burns, the combination of what they would have given Xavier McKinney and Saquon Barkley. And pass rusher is a more impactful position than safety or running back. But you let two guys go who were very talented, who were leaders in the locker room, who were impact players on your team. Probably two of the five best players in terms of talent on the roster for a guy who has been great recently, but great on a terrible team. And he's now going to have the bullseye on him. Because you just traded for him and you gave him a boatload of money and he's supposed to be a difference maker. on a team in a second year of a rebuild because you pushed the rebuild back because you were put in a false sense of security because you made the playoffs a couple of years ago. And what did you do on that? Let's go revisionist history on that offseason. How did you get better? How did you improve a playoff roster? So I'm out completely on Joe Shane as a talent evaluator and as a GM. I don't want that guy drafted a quarterback if I'm out in the guy. If majority of his drafts have not bared fruit so far. Multiple drafts. You want that guy when really the jury is shifting on the guy that he hired as well in Brian Daboll. So essentially, Joe Shane is drafting a quarterback to save his job because you can't fire a coach and a GM with a rookie quarterback. Is that the position you really, really, really want to be in? Seriously, Giant fans, ask yourself. Out of the two situations I'm about to lay out for you, and I'll put this up on a poll on Spotify. Would you rather draft a quarterback in the first round, whether you trade down and draft it, or stay at six and draft? Or would you rather trade down, get some assets, draft either the best offensive lineman or receiver at like 15, recoup a first-round draft pick for next year and a second-round draft pick for this year, surround Daniel Jones with a little bit more talent, go at it with Daniel Jones for another year, and see what you have with Daniel Jones? What are you picking? Because for me, again, I'm out on Daniel Jones as the guy. But he's a good enough NFL quarterback in my eyes. He's never had talent around. Never had that much talent around him. It's not too long ago John Mara went out and said, we've done everything in our power to screw this guy up. And now you got buyer's remorse on the guy? After your owner said we screwed him up and we're trying to get right by the guy, a year later you got buyer's remorse? Really? Okay. Draft a quarterback. Put him in essentially the same situation you put Daniel Jones. See how that goes. And oh, by the way, you don't have a transcendent all-world talent running back. See how that goes. Just floating that out there. This segment's going to get me some Giant fans pissed at me. But that's that. I'm done with backing Joe Shane. Saying the jury's out on him. No. The jury, for me at least, the jury's in on him. He's not good. He was the wrong hire. Brian Daboll, probably a good coach. Jury's still out for me on him. I'm still in the pro Brian Daboll camp as a head coach. But his boss might be as bad as the other GM in town for football team, and Joe Douglas, who's also scurrying around Florham Park doing moves for his own job's sake. But that's a podcast for another day. We'll save that for probably 2 to 3 weeks from now with the Jets. After the break, we will end touching on the Shohei Ohtani stuff. And yeah, of course, my New York Yankees, as opening day is 3 days away and counting. Back after this. All right, finishing the podcast with a story that I've been avoiding for long enough. It's the Shohei Ohtani story. And If you've been living under a rock, Ohtani's interpreter, Ipe Mitsuhara, has come under fire in connection with a federal investigation with a gambler, and it's found out that he had $4.5 million in gambling debts. Ohtani made multiple wire transfers to the gambler to cover Mitsuhara's gambling debts, and that has sent the sports landscape ablaze because of what it could mean for Ohtani, for the state of baseball, if we have another Pete Rose situation on our hands. And let me just say this first. As of right now, we don't know what the connection is between Ohtani and betting on baseball. If he did, I agree. Ban him for life, and we have another Pete Rose on our hands. But to say that Pete Rose is now all of a sudden this lionized hero and should be reinstated in baseball if Ohtani is betting on baseball is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Just because we have another guy who may or may not be betting on baseball doesn't mean we get to forgive the sins of Pete Rose. Doesn't mean that. You can't be on both sides of the street with this. You can't be condemning Ohtani for, again, what he may or may not do. And again, I'm not going to be naive. I'm not going to be in the camp of defending Ohtani and he was just helping out a friend. No. He knew something was awry. And he's a very private guy. So something like this is going to come out now because, again, private guy and all the comments made by Ohtani's crisis management firm and saying it was the maximum amount I could send and saying, well, that's a crime and going, oh, well, then it was stolen. I get all of that. He knew something was going on. The part of this that is driving me crazy, because we don't know if he bet on baseball or not. And if he didn't, and he was just betting on Premier League soccer and college and pro football, and it just got to this exorbitant amount, fine. I don't have any problem with it. I don't think we should ban him from the game. I do think he will probably get suspended for a while because he is still in connection with an illegal bookie. And he will have to face a federal investigation, which, again, is not going anywhere anytime soon. So that's another thing that's driving me absolutely up a wall, is we are trying to cram this story into a 24-hour news cycle when it is probably a multi-year story, probably a two-plus-year story, because it's not Major League Baseball looking into this solely. It is the FBI, and the FBI doesn't give a damn if you work at Walmart or you're a superstar Major League Baseball player. They are going to do their due diligence and do their investigation, and however long that takes, it's going to take. They're not going to be pressured by anybody to get this done in a timely fashion. So whatever baseball ends up finding out, and whenever their investigation concludes, I hope, as a baseball fan, that they get it right. Whatever they find out, if it's, again, he bet on baseball, throw the book at him, ban him. If he didn't, well, then it's not technically against Major League Baseball's rules to bet on other sports. I don't know how it's going to come into what the situation is with illegal gambling as opposed to legal gambling, because he did it in the state of California. It's still illegal in California. So I don't know from a baseball perspective what they're going to do with that. I would assume he is going to get suspended for a period of time. And then, like Calvin Ridley, a couple of years will pass and this will be a bullet point on his career. But to say that we should automatically throw the book at him and resurrect Pete Rose and reinstate him, it's nonsense. It's absolutely nonsense. But again, I will say this doesn't smell right. It hasn't smelled right from the beginning. And recording this Monday, Ohtani will speak at some point today. So that will either throw water on this fire or pour gasoline on it, whatever he has to say. And I'm very interested, as is a lot of people, to what he could potentially say. This is going to be the number one story the entire year. The one thing that this story will have that the Astros cheating scandal didn't have is a full major league season with everyone's attention on it. It'll be the biggest story of the entire season, for better or for worse. And I'm tired of it now, and the season hasn't started. I can't imagine how I will feel about this in July. But what I will say is, maybe he got taken advantage of. Maybe, just maybe. Because we've seen it before with not only athletes, but music stars and people in Hollywood. We've seen it before. But again, it has smelled like something's up the entire time. Hopefully, Ohtani speaking today will put some of this to rest. But let's hold off. And again, this is not the climate that we are in. But let's hold off all judgment until more facts come out. Because just going off of this, it's like screaming at a storm cloud. You don't know what the hell is going to come out next. You don't know when it's going to stop. All you know is it doesn't look right. Whew. Okay. I got to end the podcast with my Yankees. Because this spring has driven me nuts. From the Gerrit Cole, Tommy John scare, which is still floating out there, and I don't really want to think about it. From the Aaron Judge, we don't know what's going on with his abdomen. To DJ LeMahieu being a now quote-unquote long shot for opening day. Anthony Rizzo in the lineup today against the Mets, but only DHing. Batting fourth. They are, I believe, currently playing right now. I'm done with the injuries. The entire spring, from the start of camp, there's been talk about injuries. And we have to limit injuries. And guys have to be in better shape. And then it came out that a bunch of Yankees were down in January getting ready for the season. Getting in better shape than last year to start spring training. And yet, you look at the injury report, and it's filled with guys already. So, I hate it. And if LeMahieu doesn't start the season, if Rizzo is banged up to start the season, not 100%, with Cole sidelined, if Judge isn't 100% to start the year, the Yankees will lose the AL East division to start the year in April and May. And they will be lucky to make a wild card, even with Juan Soto. Even with a slimmer Giancarlo Stanton. Even with the additions of Marcus Stroman and Luis Gil winning the fifth spot in the rotation. With a always good bullpen. With Clark Schmidt coming off of a great year. With Nestor Cortez bouncing back. They, with all the talent on this damn roster, even when Judge gets healthy, LeMahieu gets healthy, Cole, knock on wood, comes back and is himself, they will be lucky to make a wild card spot because of all these injuries, because these injuries will put them behind the eight ball for the division. You can't win a division in April, but you sure as damn can lose it. And the Yankees right now, even before we're getting to opening day, are putting themselves behind the eight ball to try to win a very competitive division. And that, as a Yankee fan who is pent up and can't take it anymore and really, really wants to win a World Series, is very frustrated. It's very frustrated. I'm at my wit's end. Already, and the season hasn't even started. I'll probably be as excited as I possibly can be and get the opening day juices flowing through my body on Thursday morning. But I'm pissed off as a Yankee fan because of all the chatter at the beginning of spring training and where it is leaving us to start the year. All right, I think that's a good place to end on this side of the coin. Not the fake, Jay Leo on Twitter, j.sports.blogspot.com, joeleo67 on Threads, and of course this podcast. If you've reached this point, please like, subscribe, share this podcast to anybody who you've seen fit. If you're new to the show, please download the show. It means more to the show than you know. Friday on the podcast, we will have a very, very special guest, a returning guest, to talk some Knicks. So that is a little bit of a teaser. I will also be talking about opening day on Friday. We will recap the first day of the Major League Baseball season, so be on the lookout for that. But until then, I hope you had a great weekend. I hope you have a tremendous week. I hope the weather stops being winter and actually gets to spring. That would be nice. But until Friday, from the sweet words of Semisonic, it's closing time. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. Let's go, Yankees. Peace.